Haaland's going to get onto that. No, he's not. Maguire did, but now he's going to get onto this. Played in by Bernardo Silva. This to wrap it up. Never in any doubt whatsoever. Two for Haaland, three for Manchester City. City 3, United 0.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graeme Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Terry DeFellin. Just repeating that just in case, because there's been some weird auto subtitles coming up, hasn't there, Terry?
Yeah.
Adventure Development.
Adventure Development, indeed. This is now my new personal brand. So if you were listening to us on Spotify, listeners, and using the caption capture feature on Spotify, then at the end of the episode, it would have come up as Adventure Development. From now on, that is how I wish to be known. You, from now on, call me Adventure Development.
We're all behind that, aren't we, Jan?
Absolutely. I've already changed your name in my phone to Adventure Development.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really pleased about that. I feel like a bit of a Max Power moment.
I think you can manifest yourself as Adventure Development. Once all the paperwork's done, nominative determinism will take over.
Absolutely. It's not just a name, guys. It's a way of life. It's a way of being.
Yes.
It's a way of being.
Yes.
Of how to develop your inner adventure. It's a whole range of wellness products that I'm about to launch. I'm about to unleash on the public. And you listeners can get 5% off with the following code.
Well, that's Terry's way of harnessing nominative determinism. But, of course, what would he do if his surname was something like, I don't know, Wilder? How would his life progress then? Would it be a roller coaster? You wouldn't be able to hold him down, would you? Every turn would be a new adventure, wouldn't it? Every moment would be crazier than the last.
And completely unpredictable, Graham. You'd never know. From one day to the next, he'd wake up and go, you know what, guys? I've no idea what's going to happen today. No idea whatsoever. Well, I'm pretty certain I'm going to get a call from Sheffield United. But, I mean, apart from that, I don't know what else is going to happen today. Who knows? It could be anything.
Who knows?
Hang on a second. The phone's ringing. Hello?
Jan, Chris Wilder, this is, obviously. What the hell is going on at Sheffield United?
It's bizarre, isn't it? So, Sheffield United parted company with Chris Wilder when he failed to get them promoted at the end of last season because Sunderland beat them fair and square in the playoff final.
In a great game.
In a great game. We got promoted and they didn't. And Chris Wilder was quite upset about that. And so were the club. So they parted company. So while that feels like it was some time ago, in reality, it was only six games Sheffield United played between then and now. And now he's back in the role because Ruben Sellers lasted six games and was sacked. Absolute madness. But great for Chris Wilder. I mean, I wonder if they let him get his continuous service because he's effectively he was only out of it for a few months, wasn't he? So, you know, there's probably still stuff in his locker. So,
I suppose that's the thing, though, isn't it? Because he probably, I mean, in all seriousness, because it's quite common, actually, that they just keep you on contract until you find another job. You don't actually get sacked. You're still basically employed by the club. You're just effectively placed on gardening leave until such time as you find another job. And then, you get out of your contract that way. So they probably just went, well, look, he's actually under contract still. So it's just a question of, well, you might as well come back in, Chris. Sorry.
And he's probably got stuff in the fridge, isn't he, still? That is still okay.
There's probably a sandwich in there, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, those baby bills are absolutely fine. Mind you can keep a baby bill in the fridge for about 5 years and they'll be fine.
You can do.
Yeah. I've heard, anyway. I've heard. That's my understanding, anyway.
Like they'd still be there, eh?
No, that's true.
Even with Chris written on them. No, anyway, he ain't going to have them, is he?
He's going to go in the staff fridge and go, where are my fucking baby bills? Oh, we thought you'd left, Chris.
I never leave.
Really, though, he's the modern day Barry Fry. Listeners old enough to understand Barry Fry and Barnett. And Barry Fry and Barnett's owner, Stan Flashman, and the two of them just like hated each other. They were always constantly falling out. He was always firing him, and then he was rehiring them a few months later. It was always fantastic to witness. They just couldn't get enough of each other. It's good to see that those traditions, even in the modern game, stuff like that still happens. What it just demonstrates is actually that Chris Wilder is actually a very good coach, and that the people in charge of Sheffield United are not very good at making decisions.
It could have been a lot worse, because who was in the stands, Terry, during that last defeat?
Well, this is it. In the stand during the Ipswich game was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I was playing pool with my mate Phil at the time, and Phil spotted him. I didn't see him, but he was. I verified it just in case Phil was hallucinating. And he wasn't. He was definitely there in the stands. And we just thought, well, this is going to be a ride. This is going to be amazing. Let's see. We want to see OGS at Sheffield United. I mean, like, we want to see this. But alas, they've taken the sensible option.
I suppose the appointment of Ruben Selish was odd anyway, because he didn't really have much of a track record. I mean, unless there was some long-term plan that was known only to the owners of Sheffield United. But obviously, they've given up on that plan quite quickly in the face of them being just horrifically bad. So, yeah, go back to the Wilder plan. Hopefully it works out. Knowing what the championship is like, they'll probably be in the playoffs anyway, because, you know, there's still a long way to go in the championship. Still another 41 games to go, isn't there? So it's bound to be fine in the end.
You're going to need to win your last 10 games to get promoted in the championship.
Then get a fluky win in the playoff final. Right, Jan?
I think you'll find we lost all of our games leading up to the playoff final. And then got a fluky win.
Well, then I'll qualify that you only need to win 10 games in the championship and then you're in the playoffs.
But yeah, they didn't get a fluky win at the weekend, did they? They got a hard-fought point, didn't they, Sunderland?
They did get a hard-fought point.
Yeah.
They did get a hard-fought point. I was there in the flesh. It was good to be watching Sunderland play at the highest level. If you, and I'm sure you guys have done this and listeners have done this, they've probably watched a 2 minute, if at all, you've watched any of the highlights, but maybe the 2 minute one, or maybe just looked at the stats, you'd be forgiven for thinking that Palace spent 90 minutes peppering the Sunderland goal with shots.
Yes.
Which, yeah, that wasn't the case. That was the case for 6 shots, but the last time I saw Sunderland play Palace, Sunderland were 4-0 up at half time. It was a long time ago. And I thought we're probably going to be 4-0 down at half time in this particular fixture. So to come away with a 0-0 draw against the FA Cup winners and a seriously, seriously talented side, I was really pleased. It was great to see some of our new players. Alderete was brilliant. Roofs, the goalkeeper, is unbelievable. And he's the one who you'll have seen on the highlights reel. He's a new signing. He's a Dutch guy. He's a giant. And he's also incredibly good at stopping shots. Clearly our player of the match. Palace are an absolute class act and generated a number of chances that I think that if we'd had our championship keeper, Patson, maybe a couple of those would have sneaked in. Or if you'd had a normal mortal in between the sticks, some of those would have sneaked in. But they didn't. And the stats all point to the fact that Sunderland were terrible or they were lucky to get away with it. But that wasn't the case at all. I thought they were really solid. Xhaka was great in the middle of the park. And I thought that they seemed confident and able, and when Palace were able to break down the defence, then we had a goalkeeper there that was equal to the task.
I didn't see the entirety of the game, but two close friends did see the game. Rich was there and Martin watched it on the telly because he lived in Denmark, and neither of them were complaining about the result, it should be said. So I think they had a lot of positive things about the way Palace played, but neither of them had any complaints about the result itself, which I think tells you something about the way Sunderland played.
What the result does mean is, of course, Palace and Sunderland both got points. Arsenal won as well at the weekend. And all three of our sides, I know it's still early days, we're only a few games into the season. All three of our sides are not only in the Premier League, they're in the top half of the Premier League. We may allow ourselves a brief moment of celebration there, I think.
Yep, I'll take that. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, these are heady days for all three of us. Yeah. Absolutely heady days.
Who knows when this day may come again? It may never.
Oh, maybe next week.
Maybe next week. Yeah, probably next week. Yeah. in years to come, next season, for instance, we could be top for like 3 weeks because of the super long international break that the autumn is going to get. The autumn internationals, Terry, you'll like this. There'll be a rugby term now that we can have.
Stop it. Don't enrage me.
They're going to have a 3 week break now. From now on, this isn't just an idea anymore. This is now what FIFA has decided to do. Last week, they came up with the idea of saying, let's not have the September international break and the October international break. It's ridiculous. Let's just merge the two together and have a nice autumn break 4 weeks into the season because everyone needs one after all that excitement of the transfer window. Is this going to be a good thing because we only get one international break, or is it going to be a bad thing because it's going to be so long? What do you think, Jan?
I think the latter.
Really? Okay.
I can understand why they've done it. It's only 3 weeks instead of four. There's a number of other benefits, which I'm sure we'll go into. But if they've done the 3 weeks in November, maybe might be get away with that because the reason personally I object to it, and I think most people are the same, is that it's you play three or four games and then the season stops for 2 weeks. It just feels a bit crazy. Maybe doing it later in the season would have been better because it just feels like the stop-start nature of the international break in September is what really riles people. To be honest with you, I'm not really fussed by some of the things that people say when there's less travel for the players and things like that because I just find these fixtures, as we said last week, completely pointless and I'm just not interested in them. I'm not going to watch them whether they're there for 3 weeks or whether they're there the two sets of two. You know, it's almost like trying to polish a turd, in my view. I'm nonplussed about it.
Terry, which side of the fence are you on?
Always a little bit better disposed towards international football outside of tournaments than my colleague. But even I struggle with both autumn international breaks, particularly the first one. It's always really, really annoying. But unlike my colleague, I do believe, or even though I argued actually that England and other top-ranking teams should be just allowed in, that's not to say, which is a horrible thing to say, and I acknowledge that was a horrible thing to say, and I take it back.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. But I'm not saying that there shouldn't be an international break. You do need to get your international teams together. They do need to play these qualifying rounds. The Nations League is a good thing. That needs to happen. I am in favour of international breaks, but I do agree that the timing of them is never particularly wise. This idea of merging the two together, I suppose the way of looking at it is it gets it out of the way. You know, so you have one break rather than two, and then you can just crack on. I think Jan's got a point. I think it would have been better to have seen it maybe in November, give the season the chance to bed in, but that's not what's happened. The only thing that I think is the bigger problem from a spectator point of view, from a fan point of view, from watching these things on the television, is that really what I want to see is also I'd like to see FIFA then doing some kind of joint TV deal so they make these games free to air on the television, because then that way people could watch the games.
Yeah.
Whereas at the moment, you know, you're scuffing around either on illegal streams or you're trying to see whether or not you what subscription you might have to be able to watch your team. I know the home nations here in the UK are free to air, but I think for the other fixtures, in order to make it perhaps more of a festival of international football, then, you know, do a free to air deal and get those games free so that people can actually watch them. And then that might actually then become a good thing. Yeah, I mean, I can see the benefits in it. I believe I'm on the fence on this one. I just think it's just whatever you do with international football, with international breaks, it is never satisfactory. And I think once you're reconciled to that, then you can just try and seek the positives.
Yeah, you've still got to play these games. We aren't playing more international football. It doesn't mean more international football. It just means more condensed international football and just means a break from league football. Just when you're just getting into it again, like Jan said. So it's all very annoying, but then it's always annoying. It's just a different type of annoying. So, of course, it gives people column inches about how annoyed they are about international breaks, which is always a good thing, which they will soon fill up with pages and pages of England playing international football because that sells papers. But don't worry, they can go back to writing about Man United and Liverpool on the days afterwards. And whoever is going to be manager of Man United at the time about how terribly he's doing in his job and how they should sack him, which I suppose is a living, I suppose, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely worse ways of making a living. Absolutely. I mean, I've done some terrible jobs and I would much rather have spent that time writing about how rubbish Manchester United are. Much better. Yeah. I mean, I quite enjoy my job now, but I think if I was given the option, I would probably do that. Yeah, write about how terrible Man United are. Okay, thank you very much. I'll send you the bill.
Yeah, I mean, how many words could you get out in the next, I don't know, 20 minutes on how bad Man United are?
Well, I probably don't actually need that many because I think two is probably very, very bad. Very bad. I think that is that. But yeah, no, I mean, if you're looking for analysis, then we can do a little bit of analysis on just how bad they are. But I mean, I like many of us, I watched the Manchester Derby, and I'm sure like many of us, I was generally speaking appalled at what Manchester United have been reduced to. I'm still at that point. You guys remember when Liverpool were rubbish back in the 90s?
Yeah, yeah.
And we still went through this period of going, oh my God, they're just awful. And then they would just like maybe show signs of maybe being less awful, and they go, oh, you know, Liverpool. You know. And again, this was something that the media and the press were very, very good at doing, saying, oh, Liverpool back. Because, you know, obviously Liverpool got lots of fans, lots of readers, you know, people want nice optimism and stuff like that. And then they would just be awful again. But Man United are even worse than this.
Yeah.
Liverpool were awful, but they were like top six, top seven awful. They weren't like, we're going to be playing in the Championship next season awful, which is currently what Manchester United are. We are going through a bit of a transitionary period in terms of Premier League tactics, aren't we, guys? This is what the tactics guys are telling us. And that's because it's true, because we've got eyes and we can see. There is the injection of characteristics of long ball football are back. I mean, it's not gone back to the 90s. Those of us who remember the 90s long ball game, this is not the same kind of football. But there are characteristics of sort of like long ball football, long throw-ins, big diags, seeing a lot more big diags, particularly from kickoff. And it is all very, very nostalgic, but it is also combined with very, very modern ways of playing football. But the EPL, to use the American term, is becoming an extremely pragmatic tactical league. And the tactical ideologues, I think, are suffering. And Ruben Amorim, I think, is particularly suffering because it's entirely possible that his style of play is not suited not just to the existing squad that he has, but also to the league itself. And we might have to resign ourselves to that reality, which is a shame because he came as a coach with a really, really big reputation after his tremendous work that he did in Portugal. But we might have to acknowledge that perhaps actually that just, I don't want to be that kind of talk sport guy that says, oh, well, you know, it's different league, it's a Premier League, different. But we might have to acknowledge that actually it is a tougher ask to play that kind of football in the English league than it is in the Portuguese league. And it's been unravelling for some time, and you just have to wonder how long that guy's got. Well, I mean, actually, I think we talked about this last week. Jan suggests he's got till Christmas, if he's doing well. And, I mean, really, how many more games like this do we have to do? I know it was City, and City are kind of good, but they haven't been kind of good, have they? So Pep Guardiola, he adapts. I know he's a big, like, you know, Pep Guardiola, like the father of post-Cruyffian football and all of that stuff. But I mean, he adapts. He adapts his football, you know, in England, and he did in Germany. Ruben Amorim, I think, needs to ask himself some questions. But it may well be that it's just too late for the guy.
Yeah, and what sort of questions should Ruben Amorim be asking himself?
Why can't I get a song out of the players that I was involved in bringing in? I mean, he's got no excuse now. This is his side.
Yeah.
He's had his pre-season. He no doubt would have had his input on the players that were brought in. He had a fresh start with the new season. Because if you remember at the time when Manchester United were after him, he wanted to wait until the season ended. He wanted to finish with Sporting in Portugal and then move over then and start afresh. But that wasn't the way. But, you know, he held on. They gave him this chance, they gave him the checkbook, and they spent big. And they bought some players that were doing very, very well at their former clubs, and they're not doing well now. They've got Chelsea next. They are at home, but you know he could be a couple of bad results away from going. I would imagine that Man United, well, any club should always be looking at, you know, who their next coach could potentially be should something happen. But I'd be very surprised if they're not already speaking to somebody and sounding them out about replacing him.
Oh, dear.
Probably Eric Ten Hag, because if Chris Wilder's anything to go by, Ten Hag's out of a job now, isn't he? So why not bring him back? It's that Terry's talking about, you know, the changing face of football, and this is the changing face of football as well. You know, it's bring in the old coach. Ten Hag back in. Ten Hag in.
Yeah, long ball, long throws, big dives at kickoffs, Barry Fry. It's the 90s again, guys. It is, only it's not, because I'd feel very, very different if it was actually the 90s. I wouldn't be wasting my time with you losers, put it that way.
He doesn't mean that, listeners. He doesn't mean that.
Yeah, sorry. You should cut that out, Graham. Yeah. And I would totally be recording podcasts if this was the 90s. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'd just be sending it to you on tape.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that I totally would have been making podcasts in the 90s if such things were possible.
We shouldn't be surprised by Man United. I mean, I suppose that's the thing, though, isn't it? It is because, as Terry was saying about when Liverpool were in their banter era, and the same thing is now that United are in their banter era, is the press want them to succeed. They want them to do well. They want to write positive stories about them, because otherwise people will drift away from the game. That's the thing about it. And when people fall out of love with their club because their club has just become a laughingstock, they don't go to another club. They just leave football. And which is bad news if you're Sky or any broadcaster, because people just drift away from the game and don't come back. So it is a problem for English football if Man United don't do well. I mean, it's funny. It's very, very, very funny. But we had a discussion years and years ago, didn't we, Terry, about what would happen if Man United went bust, if they just couldn't afford all their players that they had anymore, or they got just swallowed up by all the debt they're in. And I think the conclusion was that this just wouldn't be allowed to happen because they're just too big to fail. And are they too big to fail? Can they not do anything that bad that they will go down? Because there are some poor teams in the Premier League this season, aren't there?
Well, they could have been easily relegated last season were it not for the fact that the three relegated teams had just come up from the Championship and they just weren't up to it. That's not happening this season. That is definitely not happening. See, I'm telling you right now, Sunderland are not getting relegated this season. They are too good to be relegated. They're a good side. They might not necessarily be where they are now, but they might. But I'm certainly suggesting they're not going to get relegated this season. So that's one. I think also, I mean, I would probably suggest to you that Burnley still look the most likely, although I thought that the way that they played against Liverpool, that they weren't unlucky against Liverpool because it was a dumbass handball to give away. But, I mean, you know, it was a one moment of madness in what was an otherwise pretty decent defensive performance for which they have become known. And I think that Burnley can take great encouragement from there. Leeds are harder to read at this point. We're not entirely certain how that will go. But we've seen enough from all three promoted sides to suggest that they've got something about them. And that there is a scenario whereby all three might even stay up. And so, you know, this is the time to worry. And particularly if you're Manchester United, this is definitely a time to worry. So they are not too good to go down. What a story that would be. That would be amazing. But great for the EFL, but terrible for the economy of football, as you say, Graham. So much relies on you. Think of the Mark Goldbridges of this world, who made their careers off the back of Manchester United's status. And if they were to be relegated to a second-tier club, then it's seismic. It would redraw the landscape of English football for the long term. The landscape's been redrawn for the short term because Man United are nowhere near anything like a title race, let alone top four finish. But in the longer term, yeah, I mean, who knows what the consequences might well be. I think everyone would be worried about that, anyone for whom football is their business. We'll see some kind of impact. And it is totally, totally happenable, if that is a word.
Happenable. Jan, they've got a big squad there now. They spent a lot of money in the summer. They've not got any European football. They've not got any Carling Cup football now to play. and so if they go out in the first round of the FA Cup, they'll only have a 40-game season, which, all right, quite a few teams in the middle of the Premier League only have 40-game seasons, but not teams that are meant to have squads that take them into Europe. That alone is just going to be tilting for the football economy, isn't it?
It's such a unique situation, I think, compared to any other club that would be facing the prospect of relegation, which I think they genuinely are, the way they're playing at the moment anyway. If they get rid of Amorim, who's going to want to go there, apart from Erik ten Hag? I mean, joking aside, who is going to want to go there? It's a basket case of club. They've got very strange owners, very strange operation, and they've got the weight of expectation of history hanging over them all the time. Even if you had decent owners, even if everything was fine behind the scenes, being the biggest, well, probably not now, but the biggest club in the world, and the legacy of Ferguson hanging over you, I mean, it just feels like it's impossible for anyone. But that's also, and I mean, you talk about economy, the fans that follow Manchester United who are overseas, of course, they don't have necessarily the close ties that people that are from, you know, for example, Surrey, that support Manchester United. And so it's probably easy for them to swap to other... I'm not knocking overseas fans. If you live in, you know, Australia, the Far East, and you want to watch English football and you chop and change between your favourites, I've no problem with that. You have a favourite and you follow it, and that's fine. But are you going to want to be a Man United overseas fan when you could be watching Arsenal or City or Sunderland, you know, any of those big clubs? Or you've got your choice of other European leagues as well. So the revenues that they get from overseas are going to be drying up as well, or eventually they will if they start losing punters from over there.
Yeah.
So, it's not a great place to be.
No. If I was an exec at TNT Sports at Discovery Plus, the prospect of Man United not being in Europe again for another season would make me really be considering how much I bid for the European rights next time.
There will be broadcasters overseas who will be... I think I've passed this on before. When Leicester qualified for the Champions League, I understood there were some broadcasters who said, well, you know, who are Leicester and can we not have another team in there? I mean, like, really silly, naive questions to ask. But even the fact that people might consider that to be a serious question tells you something. The reality is, however, if you're UEFA and you're looking to sell rights and Manchester United are just like not likely to be part of that, then yeah, that devalues it. I think also about this stadium, guys, that they want to get. And like Jim Ratcliffe, who I think by profoundly cheeky, impudent fashion has got some kind of expectation that the British taxpayer should foot the bill for some of the stadium construction, the new stadium construction, which I think is outrageous to even consider, given the man's own personal wealth. Outrageous. Nevertheless, there we are. If they are relegated, there's no public interest whatsoever in the British taxpayer paying for that new stadium or paying for part of that new stadium. It could all very easily fall apart very quickly. The next thing you know, that club could be a second division club playing in a third division stadium. With no exaggeration whatsoever, because I mean, I've not been there, but I understand it is in a considerable state of disrepair. And suddenly the money just dries up. And the next thing you know, they're like Preston North End or, you know, or forgive me, Jan, but Sunderland of old, you know, a former giant that just got overtaken by changing landscapes. And in Preston's case, never really returned. And in Sunderland's case, have never been able to return to their former glories, although they are obviously, you know, they're still very much a relevant football club with a, you know, genuine possibilities of sustaining Premier League football. But these things can happen so quickly with a club like Manchester United, and that could end up, I mean, it's nice, it's fun and profitable to bash Jim Ratcliffe because he's an easy guy to bash. But, you know, that is the legacy of the underinvestment of the Glazers, who have not used their investment wisely in that club, or that is to say they have, because they've used it to extract the income in order to service their debts. But this is the true Glazer legacy. It is that Yamena had now find themselves on the edge of a precipice. And it's not an exaggeration to say that.
So the football economy would be forever changed if Man United went down. Could the same be true of Chelsea, though? Would we really care if... Would anyone care if Chelsea was relegated? Would you care, Jan?
No.
Would you care, Terry?
I mean, I would care, but care because it would make me happy, and I care about things that make me happy. So, yes, I would care. Because, I mean, I think I may have mentioned it before, and I mean, you guys may agree with this, but I think Chelsea really are an awful football club.
Well, they are an awful football club, and the FA agree that they're an awful football club because they charged them, well, on 72 counts, didn't they, Jan, last week? 72, I think it was. 72 counts of being awful.
Yeah. They have probably got to 72, 73. You're just writing it down, going, God, this is a really awful football club, isn't it? These guys are awful. Yeah, the guys on the Sound of Football podcast have been saying that for weeks now.
Yes.
But they are really, just to complete the three, a truly awful football club, and are now being charged for being awful, albeit back in their most awful period when Abramovich was in charge. So they are legacy crimes.
Yes.
But nonetheless, they should still definitely be punished severely.
Well, they have come clean about this. They owned up to their awfulness and they said, it's a fair cop. Here's all our awfulness from up to, 2019 or something. Or back when we had an awful owner, an awful Russian owner. But you can't blame us for that, can you? Can you? Is it fair to punish the club now that they've got so-called American owners, which is a thin disguise for Saudi owners? Is it fair, Terry?
Yes, it's completely fair. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are the same football club. And this is the thing. I mean, if a club goes out of business and then reforms as a Phoenix club, then yeah, no, it's not fair because then that is a truly different entity. But if a club remains the same and is continuous throughout it all, then sadly, it has to bear its legacy of awfulness and take responsibility for that. I mean, I think it's laudable and I think it's also prudent of the owners to come clean as to the extent of their awfulness. Possibly because they think, well, if we talk about this kind of awfulness over here, then we maybe don't get to talk about all this awfulness that's happening over here. Because I'm sure there is probably awfulness going on. If when Abramovich had to leave, suddenly left and got all his assets taken away from him, and Chelsea had, as they should have done, gone into liquidation, then of course that's fine because that's the end of the matter because Chelsea are in liquidation. And there are no more charges to answer because there is no one left to charge. But that's not what happened, is it, guys?
No.
British government effectively nationalised Chelsea and waited until that very kind man from the United States came along with his pile of money that he may or may not have from other countries to buy Chelsea and to put everything right. And as a consequence, they're coming clean about their awfulness. So no, Chelsea do not get off the hook. Chelsea have actually done quite well under the circumstances. They should, by rights, be playing in the Combined Counties League as a Phoenix club right now. So just take it on the chin, Blues fans. Take it on the chin.
I'm sure they will, because they're stoic individuals, aren't they, Jan?
They're well known for their fair-mindedness and sense of sporting justice.
They definitely are.
We all have personal experience of just how fair-minded Chelsea fans are.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they are world champions. Let's not forget.
They really are.
They are world champions. I'm wondering whether they did self-report this or they were grassed up by Marianakis. that could have happened. But the interesting thing is that now they're facing potentially quite severe sanctions at the same time as Manchester City are. Mm. So could we see Manchester United, Chelsea and Manchester City all relegated in the same season? Now that would be a dramatic end to this campaign, wouldn't it?
Well, that's a bottom three I think we all want to see, isn't it?
We all want to see that. Absolutely, that would be amazing. What's the worst case scenario in terms of punishment, guys? Do we know this? Is there any insight there?
What most people are saying is a big, big fine.
Right.
They're not looking at things like retrospectively taking titles away or anything like that. Points deduction, whether or not it'll be a points deduction that would be big enough to relegate them, I don't know. I think Chelsea, especially this season's Chelsea, could swallow a 15-point deduction and not be in danger of going down. They'd miss out on Europe. That would probably be given when they're already in a position where they were safe, let's say. So I think a fine would actually be more effective. And I think the FA might be more willing to just fine them just in case Lucas Paqueta actually does follow through and sue them for millions and millions of pounds that he didn't earn from going to City because the FA charged him with spot fixing. So maybe the FA might think, well, we could do with a few extra quid. What are we going to get if we deduct Chelsea 15 points? Nothing. And apparently, I think the owners of Chelsea have withdrawn £100 million that they were meant to be paying to Abramovich just in case they had to pay a big fine. So they've got £100 million sitting around waiting to pay someone for all the awful deeds that Chelsea did. It seems small beer, doesn't it, in comparison? But we'll keep an eye on that. Chelsea have up until, I think, Friday to appeal it. I mean, they won't appeal it because they reported themselves. So that deadline will pass. They may appeal whatever sanctions are thrown on them. But I don't think that will be forthcoming in the next week or so anyway. That might come in time anyway. But yes, interesting times ahead for them anyway. And I'm sure this will all get sorted way before the Man City stuff gets sorted as well.
Oh, yeah. That's never getting sorted.
I guess if it is sorted out cleanly and efficiently, then at least it does give
the FA another thing of saying, well, look, we have charged this club with these demeanours and we did this and they cooperated, so this is what happened. Because the main thing about what City will be punished for in the end is not cooperating. And that's where they're going to be seriously punished. And there is no escaping that for them.
Well, can't wait for that.
But we've got plenty of football to watch instead, though. For now, anyway. While football still exists and hasn't crumbled because Man United are terrible. Yes. All the time that the earth goes round the sun, Chris Wilder keep getting reappointed at Sheffield United, football will go on. And there's some great football to watch this weekend. We've got Merseyside Derby on Saturday lunchtime. Sunderland make it into the box set because they were so brilliant last weekend, Jan. I've decided to put them in the box set for the Sunday lunchtime kickoff against the awful Aston Villa. Aston Villa, who can't even score a goal at the moment. So clean sheet on Sunday, I'm expecting, Jan. I'm sure you are too.
I'm not expecting that. No. What I'm expecting is for Villa to suddenly rediscover their goal-scoring touch. Yeah, they've had a bad start. I'm a bit more optimistic than I usually would be, but it would be a very Sunderland thing to do, just go there and have our arses well and truly handed to us.
Yeah, making up for lost time as far as goal scoring is concerned. Terry, you've got Leipzig versus Cologne. Cologne, how are they finding life back up the top flight?
Well, they're having a lovely time. They're fourth or third. Yeah. They're in a terrific time. Yeah, absolutely. They've come up fresh from the Bundesliga 2 and are full of goals. So, yeah, it's going to be very, very exciting. I would just like to clarify Aston Villa. And I don't believe the position is that they are an awful football club. They're just an awful football team. They're just going to make that. I mean, they may well be an awful football club as well, to be perfectly honest with you. But let's not do that. Let's just say they're an awful football team, because, you know, that is fairly uncontroversial.
Yes, it is. Yes, yes. There's no one arguing with that at the moment, especially not Villa fans.
No, they can't.
They can't. But I think that that'll be a good game to watch on Sunday lunchtime. Probably a lot better to watch than Arsenal City that immediately follows it. But if you want to see what we think of all those games this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. Subscribe to our weekly newsletter. And if you're on Substack, you can find us on there as well, along with Terry's newsletter as well, Association Rules. Because you're going to be doing one this weekend, aren't you?
No, I'm in Lanzarote this weekend. I'm going on holiday. So I have taken my own international break. And I was in Cologne and now I'm in Lanzarote. And so, I'm on holiday, guys. All right. I'm sorry. I'm on holiday. I can't help it. You know, normal service will be resumed upon my return. So you won't hear me saying how awful Chelsea are next week because I'm on holiday.
But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Adios.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! This was an Adventure Development production.
Ha ha ha.